Scusa Giovanni, è tutto prego, pronto Massimo. Per un altro rigore a distanza di 5 minuti, ci riprova Lorenzo Insigne contro Mempa, di destro Insigne, stavolta gol, il Napoli in vantaggio al 17° minuto, nel corso della ripresa, spiazzato Mempa che è andato a sinistra, potente la trasformazione di Lorenzo Insigne che ha calciato di collo pieno con il pallone che si è insaccato alla destra di Mempa. 110 e lode con la maglia del Napoli per Lorenzo Insigne che sblocca una situazione molto molto complicata. Subito entra nel vivo della partita Insigne, Lozano, confusione, poi Elmas destro, rete, raddoppio del Napoli, ha segnato Elmas al 27° minuto. Nel corso della ripresa cambia nuovamente il parziale a Diego Armando Maradona, Napoli 2 Venezia 0. Elmas con il destro battuto sul primo palo, il portiere Mempa che si è tuffato probabilmente in leggero ritardo.
Bentornati tifosi napoletani to another edition of Far From Vesuvius. I'm your host, Rafa Rispo, and thank goodness, finally, I'm back with some of the OGs of the FFV today. And we are in with
people.
Dr. Il Dottore, the Doctor of Napoli, Henry Bell, formerly known as Frank Sidekick. Frank, Henry.
I love it.
Putting that name to bed. We're putting it to bed tonight, aren't we?
Who am I? I don't know.
Who are you?
The Cloven Viscount, Italo Calvino. Yes. Thank you for introducing me as my real person. Very good to see you. Lovely to be back. I can't wait to talk
good
Napoli.
To see you too.
Ciao. Oh,
absolutely. And it seems like even longer that I've talked to this one. The Kirsten Schultz. Kirsten. I mean, a book. An English language book, 100,000 words on Napoli. What is going on here?
I know, it's crazy. That's why I haven't been around for a long time. But I sent in the draft to my editor about a month ago, and then I came back to the US and just hoping to hear that I won't have to cut out too much, and also hoping to add an entire chapter on the second Mr. Napoli, Sir Hamsik. So. We'll see. Wow. He wants me to actually get an interview with him, but I don't think he understands just how unreachable Merrick actually is.
I'm more worried about you in that situation.
Everyone I've said something to about that is like, you wouldn't make it through that interview.
I don't think I would either. So.
I don't think I would. I mean, I barely made it through the Lorenzo Insigne interview. It was amazing, but anyway, it's so great to have some of the originals back here today to talk Napoli. It is Thursday, so we are about 5 days removed from our match already. It's incredible to think, but let's talk about it. Napoli wins their first win over Venezia. You know, I've talked about it on the rant and, on our post-match and then again the next day with Art Morelli, but let's get you guys' thoughts about it. Let's start with Osimhen. Osimhen looked really good. If you ask me before the card, doctor, break it down for us. What did you think about Osimhen and his first match of the season?
I think he might have had too many Kimbo coffees. I think that's my... I just think...
Is that why they took it off the kits?
I think so. No, I just think... It was funny because at the time I was like, this is incredible. Like, he's pressing the goalkeeper. Spalletti has... got this amazing high press and it's going to be really exciting. And then there was this little voice in the back of my head saying, is this a bit too much? And I think there is that fine line, isn't there, between being really up for the match and actually not being 100% in control of your emotions and what's going on. And I think he went too far, the other way. And I think actually I was sending out lots of messages to people saying, that's not a red card. What are you on about? But actually looking back at it, I think it is a red card. And I think as you guys covered really well on the rant the other day, he's got to sort that out. I mean, he is young and he's brilliant and I love him. But, you know, and I'm sure Spalletti's got this under control. And maybe some of the senior players, maybe Ciro Mertens can sit down and have a bit of a quiet word and just work on that. So, yeah, it was disappointing, I think. And I did absolutely fear for the worst after that. I was like, oh, my goodness, I can't believe already the gods are against us.
Well, you know, the league came down two matches. So he'll miss the match against Genoa and he'll miss the match against Juventus after the international break, Kirsten. You know, it looked like we were pretty good in even after Osimhen got his red, Insigne was able to rile the boys up. He was able to, like, you know, just clap his hands and say, come on, let's go. Don't let this get you down. And then Zielinski goes out with an injury and it's like, the world is falling apart in the first 35 minutes. And I had said this, you know, on our Twitter, and I said it again on the rant. I'll say it to you. Was this one of the worst starts to a season without conceding a few goals and being down? I mean, such great, like, I mean, if you ask me, a couple of people you ask might not agree, but I think we have a lot of promise for the season. And right away, we lose Osimhen to a red, and we know he's going to be a multiple match ban right away. And then Zielinski goes down. Elmas comes in. But what were you thinking when this was going down?
Well, as somebody who has read about nearly every opening match to every Napoli season now, I would say that it was probably, I mean, there's obviously not details for some of the very early matches, but in recent history, that was certainly the worst start to a season in terms of not, you know, failing to win the game. But do we know how long Zielinski is out for? I've been kind of off the Twitter for a couple days.
Yeah, so it was, luckily it's only just a knock.
That's what I thought.
Saying it's just a muscular bruising, and he's definitely going to miss the Poland internationals. He's not going to play against Genoa. It's looking promising to have him back for Juventus, especially, you know, since he's not going to travel for Poland. So, you know, crisis averted, but, you know, at the time, it was just like, you know, like I said, it's all falling apart. Everything's coming down. Like I said, Elmas comes in and, you know, we end the first half unscathed. We go into the second half. Mind you, in that first half, what was there, about five yellow cards for Venezia. They were really playing us very hard. I want to say almost borderline dirty, but
I said dirty. I used the word dirty.
Okay.
Filthy. I'm going to take it a step further. Filthy.
Filthy. It was.
I mean, they knew that was the only way they could get to us. They're a brand new team coming into Serie A. They had a red card and took out one of our best players, and they still knew they were being outplayed. So that was all they could do was try to be as filthy as they could.
Right. There was also that foul, I mean, senior, right? Right, Henry, where, you know, it was that professional foul, quote unquote, that's been called, it's been tossed around. The name's been tossed around as a professional foul around Napoli Twitter. But with both hands around the shoulders, like it was a, you know,
that would be a foul in rugby. I mean, I know I'm speaking the wrong sport here, but
right,
or American football, whatever you want to call it. That's that.
And then, I know that, you know, we're comparing that. Some people were comparing that to the Chiellini foul, and we were all applauding the Chiellini foul in the Euro final.
Yeah.
I think it's a bit different. Tugging on someone's jersey a little bit extra hard and just completely getting both hands around both shoulders and just
pulling
them down.
Oh, completely it's just different.
A little bit different, yeah.
And I'm English, so I'm saying that, you know. So I think
there you go.
I mean, I think there's a broader point here that I think this year, but I was chatting to Art about this on Twitter, that the bad teams are really bad, and there's quite a lot of them. And I think that the top seven, I think, are really strong, and I think we're going to see those lower table teams employ the dark arts quite a lot, and I think we're going to see a lot of fouls, and I think people are going to look at this match and go, I think one of the best ways to try to stop Napoli is to kick them. And it was really encouraging to see how we reacted to that, actually, because I think that we need to get used to that, because there's such a, for me, a chasm in quality between the top teams and the bottom teams this year, that we're going to need to get used to rugby tackles, American football tackles, all sorts, I think.
And it's especially easy to go after Lorenzo that way because he's so tiny. I mean,
No, he is. No, you're right.
And he's got those new teeth. You've got to preserve those new teeth, haven't you? I mean, come on.
Oh yeah, the new teeth.
You know, has he got? Is it just me? But he's got like these incredible.
I don't know. Shiny new teeth and height aside, he came out in the second half. We got ourselves a penalty kick, and he missed the first one. We got two penalties. Yeah. He missed the first one. 5 minutes later, he scores the next one. I think everyone was very upset with Insigne after the first miss. Again, just to add to the nightmare start. But, you know, like I said, things turned around. Got the next penalty 5 minutes later. Wasn't going to miss that one. Buries it. Everyone forgot about the missed penalty. Then Gaetano and Lozano comes in for Fabian and Politano. Now Gianluca Gaetano comes in. This is a big point in conversation last year with myself, Raf, and in the rant that the kids didn't get enough time. A lot of people were saying that, and I was against it. Raf was for it, but I think that that Gaetano coming in really showed some sort of a, because you guys, I don't know if you're sure if you saw this, but Unas was coming in. Unas was getting ready to come in. We got the goal, and they changed it to Gaetano and Lozano.
Yeah.
And I just kind of want to get your thoughts on Gianluca Gaetano. You know, a youth player, Primavera player. Lozano coming in after that bad injury, replacing Fabiano Politano, who I think, you know, played okay. Fabiano was a little iffy in the first match. You know, Henry, I know that you were really on him in your piece for the first episode. Politano did all right, but, you know, this move happens and they are both instrumental in the Elmas goal, like seconds into the match. Your thoughts on that substitution, Spalletti, his headspace, you know, is that a testament to the Gattuso versus Spalletti debate there?
I mean, I could talk about Gaetano for a bit, maybe. Do you remember when he was in the Primavera? Like, was it 2018, 2019? Was it that season? And he was, I mean, so far ahead of everybody else. Like, I used to watch some of the games. I mean, these days, I mean, our youth setup is embarrassingly poor and is a great source of consternation to me. I think it's actually a disgrace. I really think we've got to sort that out. And you just have to look at some of the Neapolitan success in Euro 2020 to go, well, hang on, imagine those guys in our team, Insigne aside. But he was so far ahead and such a shining light in the Primavera. And I had great high hopes for him. And yet he did fine when he came on. I still don't think this is the season for him. And us, I think he should go back out on loan and be the protagonist. And I think that it will be next season for him. But great that he's being used. And I thought that Spalletti was really smart about his substitutions and making sure that our midfield didn't run itself into the ground, because we don't have a huge amount of cover with this game coming up. So, I mean, yeah, I'm really pleased to see Guy Tanner on the pitch. I just don't think we should put the season on his shoulders just yet. And if we had a decent youth setup, you know what I mean? We wouldn't need a left back. I mean, that's a classic position. We could have a decent backup left back, at least, if we had a decent youth team, you know, and that's, you know, ADL is not spending a huge amount of money. If we had a decent Primavera, we wouldn't be having half of the frustrated conversations that we'd be having.
Well, I know that there's Zanoli that Spalletti has decided to keep on the squad, you know, for a backup left back option. But then there is Goulam, who is, you know, getting better, training a little harder every day.
Goulam thing.
It's such a touchy situation. Kirsten, Elmas's goal, you know, made happen by Chucky Lozano. I'm a big Chucky Lozano fan. I think everybody is. What are your thoughts on the goal? pretty much sealed the deal for us, right? Lozano comes in after that crazy, gruesome injury that he suffered. I'm not sure if you caught any of that, but how are you feeling when we were up 2-0? What were your thoughts?
Well, for me, coming from the line of sports I come from, 2-0 is never enough, especially when you're down a man. But it seemed like the game entirely changed when Lozano came on, and I was thrilled by that. I mean, you can give a little credit for Almas for that goal, but I think most of it was Lozano, and I'm glad to see that he's going to be having at least some role, hopefully more of a role, in my opinion, this season. But yeah, like I said, I'm never confident that 2-0 is going to be a win, even as it, you know, lurches into the 85th minute, because I'm always worried that somebody's going to strike back and acquire Mazzarri time like we used to have.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I'm glad you brought that up, because, you know, you're right. A 2-0 is never really safe, but with the defense playing as solid as they were, right? Mm-hmm. Kirsten, Koulibaly and Manolas back there were clearly pretty much in charge, you know. A handful of chances for Venezia. Nothing, I would say, that was too worrying. But also,
Medeiros, they hit the post. They did hit the post.
Yeah.
They did hit the post, yes. And I was just going to say that Medeiros played very, very, you know, a pretty good game, despite having, you know, one of the balls beaten and hit the post. But Manolas, like I said, and he played solid. Koulibaly was, you know, Koulibaly.
Yeah.
And despite everybody's need and want and call and desires for a new left back, Mario Rui was one of the best players on the pitch, and it's going to be, and this is why I wanted to stay on you, Kirsten. She's holding her head in disgust right now. It was Mario Rui and Lobotka who were, you know, and Foot Mob gave Lobotka man of the match, which is
insane. I'm okay with that. I am ready for a new Slovak to love. Okay. So
yeah, I know you are.
I'm attaching myself to him.
Matic. That's right.
Yeah.
But, you know, what are your thoughts on, because again, everybody's talking about the left back position. And in this case, the left back wasn't an issue. Like, the left back spot wasn't an issue.
He played Venezia. Come on. I need a bigger sample size. But I did say on Twitter, I actually said, oh, look, Mario Rui did something good for us. And then he followed it up by, like, tripping over the ball or something, but he wasn't.
You have strange powers over him. You have strange powers.
I do. I mean, no, he was not the worst. But like I said, I still feel we need a better left back to be a top four. Well, not necessarily to be a top four, because like Henry said, there's like seven in the league, and we only have to top three of them. But to really be a competitor, I don't think he's there. And I mean, he's had enough time to learn about things like discipline and control. You know, we can give that to Osimhen, little bit less experienced in that. But I still feel like Mario Rui wants something. Once he does something bad, or the other team does something bad, that he just loses a little bit of his discipline, and that's what makes him dangerous. And I don't know, maybe it's because I see him through the opposite of whatever rose tinted glasses are, but I gotta have a couple more good games from him to really say, okay, yeah, he's a good enough left back to carry us to where we want Napoli to be.
That's a fair point.
Fun as a backup, I think. You know, he's a backup left back.
Yes.
You know,
he's not
a protagonist. Such a shame that Gulam got hurt. I mean, he was such that wonderful half a season when he was, and he's obviously such a great person as well.
Yeah, he is.
Can I briefly return?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, just the Elmas, because I think it was really encouraging to see him, and I'm a big fan of his. Not just because he looks almost exactly like Jess from Gilmore Girls, but the
he does. Sorry.
yeah, which is a great show. I mean, one of the all-time great shows. But he is versatile. He can play on the left. He can probably play in a 10. I'm not sure about him right in the middle of the park. But I think that he needs to score more goals. And I thought his goal was so well taken, really intelligent how he took it at a different angle to where the keeper was expecting it. And maybe having the Euros under his belt, I think he got a bit distracted by that last season. I think you talked about that, Rafa, on the show before, and I think absolutely spot on for it. Country like a new country, North Macedonia, to go there, and the way that it all happened and the drama, I think, and he's quite young, I would be distracted. He's going to be really important for us this season. And that was incredibly encouraging. And he looks like Jess from Gilmore Girls.
I'm going to wear my Team Jess shirt for the next match.
Do it.
Real
time. Elmas has a goal against Germany, a winning goal against Germany in World Cup qualifying for North Macedonia. He's one of only three players in history to ever achieve that feat, mind you. That was only Germany's only third defeat, in World Cup history. So, you know, he's with Michael Owen, another Portuguese player that's cannot remember, Carlos Manuel, and Elif Elmas are the only three players in history to achieve a game-winning goal against Germany in the World Cup qualifiers.
Spectacularly random collection of players there, Ross.
Exactly. Well, you know, I looked that up last year when he did that because I said to myself, Germany never loses in World Cup qualifying ever. So I went back and checked it out, and I could not believe it. It's like that's one of the more underrated statistics I think I've ever seen in my entire life.
Love it.
And we've got him in our midfield this year. And, you know, Ralph Pizarro is a very big fan of Elmas, so we'll be watching him quite closely. So back to Manolas really quick, because he played, you know, and Unas was planned to feature by Spalletti, you know, despite transfer rumors. You know, the Manolas and Unas transfer rumors keep getting growing, you know, a little bit more. But the offer for Manolas seems so steep. I mean, they're saying the reports are Olympiacos wants him for $5 million and De Laurentiis won't let him go for less than 15 when they paid 36 for him 2 years ago. Yeah. I don't feel like that's a realistic target, you know, price for him. I think De Laurentiis wants to get his money back at least if he's going to let him go. So I don't really see that happening. And but Unas definitely said he'd like to go to Marseille, and there's a possibility that he'll go. What are your thoughts on that? You know, we get the win, they play, they are about to feature, what have you. Team looks pretty strong in the win despite being down. You know, Insigne rumors, is he going to resign? Is he going to leave next season? Yada, yada. They continue to go. I mean, I think as long as the transfer market is open, these things are going to happen. These rumors are going to be around. But what are your thoughts, Kirsten? I'll start with you. What are your thoughts for the Insigne? You know, pretty much all the rumors. What are your thoughts? And we've only taken in one player from the transfer market, Juan Jesus, who is, you know, Spalletti recognizes as a good player, but no one else on earth does. What are your feelings about this mercato this season?
I think that we've seen some seasons in recent Napoli history where that's actually happened. We'd have had a pretty, I wouldn't say stable mercato, that doesn't make sense, but keeping the team stable seems to be the goal. And after all the upheaval that seemed to occur with the pandemic and everything like that, now we've got a new coach. It seems like Spalletti knows what these players can do. He knows the tactics that he wants to follow, and that for the most part, he's got who he wants in those spots. So I'm not that afraid of us not getting anyone else except for a left back, as always. As for Lorenzo, I think they use his name because it is the biggest Napoli name that will make headlines. It's clickbait. Mm-hmm. We know, as we knew right up until Hamsik left, that they were using his name for clicks as well, because he was one of the famous Napoli names. Insigne has even more clout behind him in terms of that after being a Euros winner. So they want to say, oh, he's so big now, he'll leave Napoli. Why would he stay at Napoli? Napoli is not a big club, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, We are a big club. He wants to get us more silverware. And he wants to be in his home. He loves Naples. So at the risk of jinxing this, I'm going to say to all the Lorenzo rumors, and you guys can deal with the other ones.
Yeah. I mean, why leave the agent, the super agent, whatever his name is? I mean, he left him, was it last year? He separated.
Oh, Raiola, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then leave. That doesn't make any sense. I mean, we don't know what's going on, but just looking at him on the pitch, he just doesn't look like someone that's going to leave. I mean, we just don't know. And got so many ties to Naples and Napoli. I think perhaps even if he wanted to, I think it would still be quite difficult for him to go, to be honest. So I think I really can't see that happening. I did that bit for the show before, I still think we need a central midfielder. I don't think it's going to happen. I think it's a weird COVID thing. And unless you're owned by an oligarch with a terrible human rights record, you're not going to be buying players. And to be honest, I'm all okay with that. I like the fact I support a team that isn't owned by a regime that is doing awful things in other places around the world. So I mean, that's my personal opinion. So I'm quite happy to consolidate. But seeing Mario Rui starting still kills my soul ever so slightly.
Okay, but do you think maybe Spalletti and his tactics and his approach could help fix the Mario Rui situation? You know, I mean, he said himself that he's happy with what he's got, and a couple of additions wouldn't hurt, but overall he came in saying that he likes the team that he has. So, yeah. I mean, if that's going to include Mario Rui, maybe Spalletti has a way to fix that. You know, I mean,
we looked more lopsided towards the right. Did you notice that? Sort of underrated thing, the way that Di Lorenzo and Politano play together. They have a really good relationship. They had some really good moments last season as well. And that carried on today in the last match. And Di Lorenzo was getting further up the pitch. Obviously, come back from something incredibly confident. And perhaps the left side is going to be a bit more defensive, which, I don't know, maybe Mario Rui could get. But then go back to what Kirsten said, and it's like, do you want him making tackles in the penalty area? I mean, he's a bit of a liability, isn't he? So, I mean, you know me, Rafa, I'm always optimistic. I'm a fan of Spalletti, but I think we're being very rose-tinted to be like, our left-back situation is okay. Because it's not really. But it wasn't a problem. After Juventus, ask me again, Rafa.
Yeah, let's talk about it after Juventus. That's for sure. All right, so I'm going to go to our Ask FFV. I put this out there a couple of days ago. We didn't get much, guys. Come on, get in, ask the questions. I know we have to get acclimated. We're back. Far From Vesuvius is back. And but, you know, get in there. Chris Kelly, though. Chris Kelly, the OG.
Hey, Chris representing Yorkshire and Napoli.
Yes, the real drip king of Napoli. Never mind me and Francesco. He's the real drip king. So he comes in, and Kirsten, this is going to be hard for you, okay? Maksimovic playing against his former teammates so soon. Good or bad thing? This is in reference to our next match against Genoa, where Maksimovic has reportedly agreed to a deal with Genoa after wanting to stay with Napoli. That wasn't going to happen. He left on a free. Looks like he's going to go to Genoa for a season at least. I don't know if he'll play, but
yeah,
might as well ask the question. How do you feel?
I think if he plays, I'll be sad. I, as everyone who listened to this podcast back when I had an actual voice on it, I was all Mac all the time. I was really rooting for him. But he never really quite found his home he might have found his home in Naples, but he didn't find his home in Napoli. He just was too fragile at the back. He'd have a great game one day, and then he'd have a horrible mistake in the next one. The next one that he managed to play anyway. So I guess, as hard as it is to say, we'll be hoping that if he does play, which I don't think he will, that'll be too quick. If he does, that we're hoping he has one of his off days. And I think just the pressure of being up against a team where he wanted to stay and he wanted to impress and he wanted to have that chance with a higher side would be enough to force him into making one of his not so rare mistakes. So maybe we should cross our fingers that he's off, ready to be on the pitch.
Well, we're going to have Fabrizio Pardone from Genoa Club Toronto after our chat to talk about his club, Genoa. We've decided to start this new segment where I interview someone from the opposing team. I had started calling it Behind Enemy Lines, but I think I'm going to call it Frenemies because I'd like to invite them in as our friends, right? Instead of an enemy. But I will be sure to ask him that question as well. I'm sure he's excited no matter what. Maksimovic, for me, had a bad season. And a lot of Napoli fans, and maybe a lot of fans outside of Napoli, you know, tend to really give it to a player who doesn't perform for a season. Look at how we treated Koulibaly after, you know, and everyone else, really. You know, I mean, personally, I think Napoli fans always knew what Koulibaly was. But outside of, you know, the Napoli fandom, Koulibaly was washed after one particularly bad season. So I still rate Maksimovic. I would have been okay if he came back in. But, yeah, like you said, Kirsten, I don't think, even if he does, because I'm not sure he's completely signed either. And if he were to sign, I think it's too soon to get him in against us. But it was an interesting...
And they could really do with the help, ref, at the back. I mean,
well, they could. And that's another thing. Yeah, we're going to talk to him about that, too. I'm going to ask him, too, because they brought in, like, four or five center backs. And I haven't seen a single one of them utilized yet. So
they were so bad against Inter, man. They were so bad.
They
took a beating against Inter. So I guess my next question is, you know, what do you feel about Genoa? Like, how do you guys feel we take the approach? Because now, you know, like I said, we don't have Zielinski. We don't have Osimhen. You know, we've got Petagna on the bench. We've got, so far, we still have Unas on the bench. We have Elmas, who we know he could do. We know where he could play. But who's going to take that spot for Osimhen? Is it going to be Lozano in the middle? Is it going to be a 4-3-3 where Lozano plays a false nine? Because we know Spalletti can do that. Is it going to be where Elmas is more central or maybe shift to the left and make Insigne more central? There's a lot of options. And we mentioned this on the rant too, that this is a good time with Art, that this is a good time to kind of tinker with this because it's right before the FIFA break. It's right before the Juve game as well, and we can afford to do this on the heels of a win. We can afford to take this time to tinker with our lineup. Doctor of Napoli, how do you see us approaching the Genoa match? What do you think?
I think it's going to be, well, it's hard to predict because we've got a new mister, haven't we? And I think, I know what I would prefer, which is I'd like to go back to 2005 Spalletti at Roma and let's wheel out the false nine, because Genoa looked just so bad at the back. And maybe after they got their spanking from Inter, they're going to come back and be a bit more solid. But I think a super fluid front four of a 4-2-3-1 formation with a false nine and, you know, Insigne, Lozano take it in turns to step into that role with Politano, and that's four, isn't it? No, it's not. That's three. Where's my other one? Elmas, you know, in that 10. And, you know, Elmas can play on the left as well. So you've really got those four players. You can't see what I'm doing with my hands here, but you've got, you've really got players, really, apart from Politano, I mean, even Politano can shift around a bit, can completely shift around that front four and just confuse the absolute hell of a pretty average Genoa team. And they still have Goran Pandev. I love you, Goran Pandev, but if you're still relying on him now, that's not a great sign. So that's what I would like to see, and I'd like to see us really approach it with that kind of, you know, we're not supposed to like Roma, and for good reason, but there were bits of that Spalletti Totti as a false nine with De Rossi and all that I did really enjoy watching. And I think this is an opportunity to really do that. It would be sad. I personally, I don't think Petagna is a a good enough player for Napoli, and I think it would be a shame to just stick the big man up front and hoof some balls in towards him. I see it's an opportunity to be creative and maybe go one better than Inter to really lay a marker down. But that's asking for so much trouble, and now it's all my fault if we don't do very well. Sorry, everyone.
Yes, because Spalletti is definitely listening to this right now and will take your advice. Absolutely. He might be. Hello, mister.
Yeah. Hi. Ciao.
Chris actually asks again, keep Manolas and Unas and sell Petagna. And bringing that up because, you know, what you just said, Doctor. Should we just sell Petagna and go with Osimhen and possibly Lozano in his place as a backup? Let's not forget we're getting Mertens back pretty soon, too. What are your takes on that? Kirsten, I'll start with you. What do you think?
Well, I mean, I hadn't really even considered that, so you're kind of blindsiding me there. I should have looked at the Twitter questions beforehand. But, I like what the good doctor said about.
I work very hard. I work very hard for my PhD. So it's very good to hear me being called a doctor.
Well, so Petagna, rubbish. Get rid of him. No use.
I would very gladly just get rid of him. I mean,
okay.
I would assume we're not paying him not very much or anything like that. But I don't worry about the Napoli books. Our books are usually pretty solid. So. In terms of that, doesn't matter that much. Just I don't want to see the big man up front unless we're bringing back Cavani.
We're back here again. We'll never stop.
No, I just like to slip his name into every podcast that I participate in.
Well, Cavani is still my favorite player of all time, so. I can't help but cheer for United when Cavani's on it. You know, I'm definitely not a United fan at all. But you know, when Edinson Cavani is playing, it's different.
I keep getting all these messages from some of my friends in England who support Man United, telling me about how good Cavani is. It's like, yep, known that for a little while now. Thank you. But yeah, I think the only argument to keep Petagna is that. We'll do a lot of work on the training pitch to have a focal point in attack, which is what Osimhen gives us. But Osimhen does it in such a different way. I mean, you know, and so, you know, they are actually very, very different players. They're both tall, but the only argument to keep them is that some of that work, if you lose Osimhen and you bring on Petagna, then, you know, you can keep working. But it's interesting that he didn't come on.
To me, it's not the same. Like, I know that Osimhen is tall, but I don't think of him as, like, the big man up front because he just seems so much more agile and so, I guess, more able to read the game and not just someone that in the English style you thump, the old English style that you just thump up balls to and just hope that he's right in front and able to let it bounce off him. Into the
I totally agree. I mean, Osimhen is a super intelligent player, like in terms of his movement off the ball, what he does to get other players into positions. I mean, he's wonderful, yeah. Whereas Petagna, you know, he should sign for a Tony Pulis side, you know, if Tony Pulis comes out of retirement, he should go there. Well, that was harsh. I'm sorry. Please don't beat me up, Petagna. You're much bigger than me.
So, our last question, and I'll get this in. Is from an Instagram follower, Patrick McRae at PattyMac1986 asks, can we discuss how nervous we should be whenever Insignia lines up for a free kick? My gosh, ever since he bricked the one against Fiorentina, he asks, I don't remember if it was the one against Fiorentina, I've been nervous. Also, although he did put in the rebound, I'm not sure where he was going with this one. He lined up for about three or four free kicks and it hit the wall all the time. But I mean, Insignia knows how to take free kicks and score them. So, you know, I don't think I'm as nervous as him setting up for one as maybe like I'm not nervous for him to set up for one. I know I'd probably rather have Mertens taking them, but he wasn't an option for the game. But I'm okay with Insignia taking free kicks. I don't know about you guys.
I was nervous when it looked like Mario Rui was about to take a free kick. That's what made me nervous.
Absolutely.
I understand that. I understand that. But Mario Rui did take a free kick and assisted a match winner last season where Bakayoko scored. I think it was against Udinese last year on the road, I believe. Yeah.
He scored a free kick for us once as well, didn't he, Mario? But it's so cute.
I believe he did.
He's got one.
Isn't it cute seeing him standing next to Zinia, like looking like he's going to take the free? No way you're ever going to take this free kick. No one in the opposition
I'm sure it's a mind game with the wall. I'm pretty sure that.
The wall wasn't that scared,
you don't think? All right.
Even though they were Venezia.
Yeah.
Go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I think that Chiro is the guy to take off.
Once he comes back.
Well, it might only have been Venezia, but in the past, we probably would have dropped points. We don't.
Good point.
We're up 3 points to start the season, which is great. We should expect another 3 against Genoa. Let's hope. Let's not jinx ourselves. But the reality is Genoa were so bad. Inter made Genoa look like, a cheat team. And sadly enough, they made Sidibu look like he did not come back from the Euros and won a European Cup. But I don't think that was all his fault either. Like you guys said, the defense was rubbish. But he looked out of shape, though.
He didn't look right.
He did a little bit. I mean, he didn't have much to do against Wales, did he?
I live in a half Sardinian household, so I can't be rude about
something. No, you cannot. It's incredible to think that Sidigu and Marchetti are their keepers. They've each got one match in the World Cup game within the Buffon era, which is pretty crazy too. That's another.
Rafa, you're full of stats tonight.
I did my prep for our guest, Fabrizio, but that, for some reason, jumped right out at me. Like, before I even got to look anything up, I was like, oh, wow. Sidibu played in a World Cup. So did Marchetti. That's pretty crazy. And then upon looking up stuff for Genoa, I found that. I was like, oh, okay, that confirms it. I was right. But, yeah, I mean, it's cool. It's cool, but they're just on the wrong team. That's all. It's really important. And they're our Gemellegi, aren't they? They're supposed to be our friends.
Wait. They aren't anymore.
Go ahead. Right. I want you to bring this. So let's talk about this because our friend Fabrizio really would only rather talk about current Genoa stuff. Let's talk to you then, Kirsten.
What's
going on? Why is Genoa and Napoli, why are they not friends anymore? What's going on?
They broke their twinning when we wouldn't agree to, I mean, not officially agree, but we didn't help them to rise up in the table, I'm pretty sure. No, that's how we started the damn twinning.
Yeah.
It's hard to...
Yeah, I believe it was in the 80s, right? Or is it in the early 90s?
Yeah, I think it was the early 90s. We started the twinning when we drew with Genoa, which allowed them to stay in the league and allowed us also to be in Europe, I believe.
Okay.
And then
there was that amazing moment where we both qualified for Serie A.
Yeah, that's what I was gonna say. That is the Serie A
that I'll never forget.
That was beautiful, man.
You know, Arema screaming "Nudi alla meta, nudi alla meta" when everybody was naked, half naked on the pitch before the whistle blew. That was when I believe it was. What was the other match? There was another match that involved us. Something had to go that the same way. I think it was Triestina and I don't remember who else. But it was a match that had to go our way. And that match ended before ours did. And the pitch was invaded. They were stealing our clothes. The Genoa kit man trying to get in I'll never forget the Genoa kit man trying to get into their locker room. It was locked. They couldn't get in. To get clothes to replace them to finish out the 2 minutes.
Love it.
We finally did it.
I mean, that is France, isn't it? That's pretty French, isn't it?
Talk about it. Yeah. It was a very fiery game, though. There was a post. There was a really good save. There were really close calls. But once the result was in, it was just kind of like a kickabout, you know? But the lasting impression I had was the fans cheering together on the pitch, Genoa Napoli fans hugging, taking pictures together, Genoa fans hugging Napoli players, vice versa. The two managers, who sadly was Gasperini, I can't stand, with Eddie Rea, you know, celebrating the dual promotion, senza playoff, tutti in a senza playoff. I'll never forget this, never. And now apparently it's over, right? I mean,
yeah,
you know,
it's only been over for like 5 years, I'm pretty sure, at the most. And I think most Napoli fans didn't actually get that memo. I know it was Genoa that broke it off. And I can't remember, though, this is so silly because I researched it like 3 times. It was difficult to find.
Well, if you want the inside, if you want the scoop,
yeah, just wait for the book.
Do you have a title yet?
Yeah, it's More Than Maradona, The Life, Death, and Rebirth of Napoli Football Club, because it wasn't always SSC Napoli. So
that's a good title. I like that.
I love it. I cannot wait.
I mean, everything out there is about Maradona. And of course, as Napoli fans, we love Maradona, but we'd like to know more about our club, the wider club around.
Mm. Him, even when Maradona was playing, you know, there was other people in the team doing cool stuff. I mean, not as cool as what Maradona did. So.
And, you know, I wouldn't be surprised, Kirsten, if it was so difficult to find this in Italian, you know, much less in English. Obviously, it's impossible to find it in English. But to the research that you've put in, and I know you interviewed me over a year ago, to talk about my experiences with my father in the club. But the amount of research that you must have had to do is insane to get a book in English about it. Because like I said, it's probably almost impossible to find something non-Maradona in Italian even.
There's a really thick book, but it's at least like 15 years out of date. I think it's from the 90s. And of course, I couldn't get the book, so I'm just like reading excerpts from the book. And the club wouldn't cooperate, so I didn't get to use their history. I mean, I would send them specific questions like, I found this discrepancy between this and this. Can you correct it? No, nothing. So they'll have to live with it if I make a mistake. I covered my ass.
Listen, it's all good. The history of Napoli in English. Look for it, guys, everywhere.
I will look up that twinning thing and get it on our Twitter before the Genoa game.
Please do. Well, guys, that's going to wrap it up. I really, really appreciate you guys coming back in. You know,
fans, loved it.
Get ready for more of this because we're hitting it hard, right, Doctor? Right, Kirsten? We're hitting it hard. We're
going. Yeah, thanks for having me. Great to see you all.
Yes, absolutely. Great to see you all too. Stay tuned for Fabrizio Cardone with Genoa Club Toronto. He and I will sit down, chat about Genoa and the approach they're taking to face us. Again, guys, thank you very much for joining. And as always, Forza Napoli, sempre.
Sempre.
All right, we welcome in our good friend from the Genoa Club Toronto. His name is Fabrizio Cardone. Fabrizio, welcome to Far From Vesuvius. How are you today?
I'm awesome. Thank you for having me with you guys.
Yeah, thanks for coming in. Let's start by saying, you know, again, welcome to the show. And you're our frenemy this week as we play Genoa at the Malassi on Sunday, 12:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Tell us a little bit about yourself, Fabrizio. What are your ties to Genoa? How did you become a fan? And tell us a little bit about Genoa Club Toronto.
Sure. Actually, to give you the answer, I kind of had to give you a little bit of history of who I am myself. So born in Genova, Italy, came to Canada, Toronto specifically, when I was 6 months old. Then a whole bunch of things happened throughout life and so on, but nevertheless, I moved back to Italy when I was 15. So 12, 15, anyway, somewhere around there. So that's basically my first real ties with Genoa, which essentially, not knowing anything, just a kid going back to Italy, not even going back, because for me it was basically almost like a first time, right? I had a choice between the two teams. Now, didn't really have anyone that I knew because I was just like brand new, like a newcomer or something like that. Mm-hmm. But, and I'm sorry for the other side, but Genoa to me has always meant the city. So Genoa equals in English Genoa. So that's where it came. I guess the love of the colors was innate within the heart. So red and blue. And the other ones to me was just more like a messy t-shirt. Anyway, so that's okay. Where it starts, the love for Genoa. Then when I moved back to Canada when I was 25, that's when basically, this was like in the mid-90s, soccer in Canada was ups and downs throughout the decades, but it was like on a lowish type of thing. So I self-made a mandate for myself to become some sort of like to have some propaganda for calcio, for soccer in general. So to me at that point, it was obviously about Serie A, obviously about Genoa, because it's always, you know, a smaller team. So it's not like in the top 4, 5, 6 and whatnot. So it was that also, and not only for that, but also like to talk about culture in general instead of like your typical hockeys or baseball or, you know, basketball and so on. So that's when I founded the club.
There you go. Any family members, fans of the other side? I mean, Sampdoria, do you have any, like, your parents or cousins or aunts and uncles? Did anybody sway you the Genoa way as well? Or was it just sort of your own kind of natural feeling towards Genoa?
No, other side, you mean Entella, right? Not Orspitz? No, I'm joking.
Yeah.
No, Entella, actually... Yeah, sure. No major soccer. Right? No, exactly. My mom actually comes from Bologna. So if she really had to be a fan at that time, she was more of a pro Bologna. But no, so it was just like all to myself to be a Genoa fan.
Well, similar colors, right? Bologna, Genoa, they've got pretty much the same colors. So that's pretty cool. Well, I like the story. I really do. How about the club? How did the club come to be? It's just something that you decided to get going.
Yeah, basically it started like that. I just wanted to get it going, start to spread the word, starting to spread the name of Genoa. So it's not only Genoa Salami, but it's also more to it. Yeah. And then from there, at that time, didn't even exist. So I bought .com and I started to replicate the news that was on the official website from GenoaCFC.it. I bought the GenoaCFC.ca at that time. Perfect. And I was just like, you know, beginner in HTML and stuff like that. And I was just like putting the most important news in English. As back then it was nothing much, and at least for Genoa, anyways, news in general in English. So I kind of profess also to be like one of the first, if not the first, of broadcasting news in English for Genoa. And then from there, I guess thanks to the website, emails were starting to be a big thing, and so on. I started to get some contacts, and I met a few fellows here in Toronto that were actually from Genoa themselves and Genoa fans. So then basically it grew from there. Then we started to get together to watch games, especially like the derbies. and stuff like that. So it's just like launch from there. Then back in the 90s, there wasn't too much of immigration. But then over in the late 2000s and 2010s and so on, so many people are moving out from Italy, as you probably mm-hmm. know yourself.
Sure.
And, yeah. Obviously from other squad teams as well, but also people from Genoa, whether they are in Toronto or in Ottawa or in Vancouver, we all connect. And even though we're not sitting right beside each other, forget about COVID part, but they're still all open to the team, to the club.
Perfect. That's awesome. Love that story. I love when people try, to connect, the world with their clubs, and connect, the local community too. I think it's great. I have aspirations of starting a Napoli club upstate. I'm sure that I'm upstate New York, so I'm sure there's a lot of, clubs out there. Oh, actually, I know there are a lot of clubs out there, but there's nothing here locally. So I'm starting, I'm waiting for COVID to kind of calm down before I get that going too. So yeah, no, it's inspiring. I really appreciate it. I love the logo. It looks great. Love it. Yeah, and you do really well on Twitter also, keeping up with the news coming in. So speaking of news coming in, I think maybe we'll start with the mercato. Your mercato looked a little bit promising, to be honest with you, after I did a bit of studying on it. You signed Sirigu for a year. You brought in a Belgium center back, Zinho van Huisden from Inter. Actually, he was bought from Standard Liège. He's owned by Inter, loaned out this season. He played and was one of the best players on the pitch against Inter, in your loss, in your 4-0 loss. Sorry, I have to bring it up, but but FootMob has them as one of the best players, along with Batels. You brought in a Mexican center back too from Pumas. He was a pretty good player on the Olympic squad. Stefano Sabelli comes in from Empoli and Brescia. Alex Buska comes in from Wilsa Krakow. He played three seasons there, 39 appearances, 4 goals. The big signing, I think, if you ask me, is the Ghanaian 27-year-old Caleb Ukban from Trabzonspor for 3 seasons, 109 appearances, 31 goals. He also did play with Leeds, and he was also previously owned by Kievo. I don't think he made an appearance with Kievo, but we don't need to talk about Kievo because they don't exist anymore, thankfully. And this is the second week in a row that I can bring up that Kievo does not exist anymore.
Actually, did you know that the Pelissier has actually reinstated the club like a net new?
So I heard something about him attempting to, but I also heard that it didn't go through.
Oh, okay.
I'm not 100%. We can check that again, but as of now, let me rejoice that Kievo is gone. I'm not a fan of
officially
the
it is
at all. Yeah. Officially, Kievo is gone. And listen, we know we've had our share of issues with our clubs, haven't we, throughout the years? We know how it is. So for real, my sympathies are with them, their fans, but not necessarily with the club itself. I'm not a big fan of the Verona clubs. But anyway, that's your mercato in. We haven't seen Ukban play yet, or Busca, or Vasquez, the Mexican center back. But for me, a big piece of news is Nikola Maksimovic agreed with Genoa. I couldn't find anything about a signing or an official statement that he's joined the club. Can you shed a little bit of light on that? A lot of Napoli fans really turned on him last season because he did not play well at all. But that's not to say that he's not a great center back and would really bolster your defense, which I'm sorry to say looks like it needs it. What do you know about Maksimovic coming into Genoa to help out?
Well, okay, so with respect to the market itself, a lot of players, as everybody knows, I guess, anyways, whoever follows the transfer market, is Genoa, because of its precedent. Preziosi has always, they put a lot of players attached to the name. And lately, I've noticed, that for whatever the reason is, they come to the city, they do the medical exams and so on, and then it seems like a done deal. And I'm not going to load right now with me while I'm speaking this, but that it doesn't happen. But then they send them back for whatever that reason is. So one of them happened with, I can't even recall right now, apologize for that, too long ago. But Maksimovic, I think today was expected to come into the city for the medical exams, and only the officiality would actually come after the exams pass and the actual signing itself. So that's probably why you haven't found anything yet as like the official red tape official. So that's the situation right now. Now, to your point of what do I think with respect to a defense? Yes, in desperate need, definitely rejigging the defense back after last year, which there was a little bit of a definitely the Belgian that you mentioned, it will be an asset to the team. I think he's already an idol for under many spotlights anyways. Mm-hmm. And definitely I think he's going to do an amazing year. Unfortunately, at the same time, similar to Scamacca, it'll only be like a 1 year perhaps showdown, and then he'll have to leave because I think it's just a straight loan. Anyone else, like even the captain itself, Crescito, pure Napolitano, by the way.
Yeah.
I think it's still, it needs some revamping, some newcomers, some new players, some younger, some, you know, experienced. Of course, you still need those, but it's time for change.
Right. The Mexican Vasquez is in as a purchase. Maksimovic would be, you know, done deal, free transfer. Hopefully you can get a good season out of this kid, Van Huisden, and, you know, all the best to that, you know, situation. I mean, you have Sirigu in net, you know, you got to kind of represent him. He's a Campione d'Europa, you know, he can't come in giving up. Now, granted, it was Inter, and, you know, you have a tough schedule, you know, Inter first, Napoli second. It's very, very tough to deal with. So, you know, hopefully these guys can come in and really help revamp the defense. But the players that have gone, I mean, so many players out on loan, you mentioned it, I looked it up quick. Luca Pellegrini, Strootman, Scamacca, Perin, Zappacosta, Piazza, Golden Eagle. All lost. You lost Christian Zapata to, you know, free agency. You lost Sisbora to Germany. You lost Shomurodov to Roma. A lot of players here. Good players that are gone. So it begs a question. I mean, is there anything that excites you? And I don't mean this in a derogatory sentiment. I really don't.
Of course.
But is there anything that excites you about Genoa this season? I think a plus is Pandev is staying. As a Napoli fan, I'm a very big fan of Goran Pandev. I absolutely loved his performances with North Macedonia at the Euros and qualifying. I'm always looking at him, you know, Nonno Goran, we call him, even though he's a year younger than me. But I love to call him Nonno Goran. I think that he's just such a leader on the club that, you know, no matter what, whoever you bring in, he can guide the players to it. You know, you also brought in Hernani from Parma, who isn't that bad. And this young Italian kid, Cambiaso, not related to the Argentine Cambiaso. It's only one S, but he's in the team too. You still have Rovella, who's great. Sturaro's still there. With this new attacker coming in, is there anything that excites you? Any hidden gems to uncover that the average Calcio fan might not be aware of?
Well, okay, first of all, I have to say this, which is not, again, to mock the win of Inter, God forbid, because we know champions from last year, so they are all out to confirm themselves again. Nevertheless, there's a whole bunch of marasma, how we say in Italian, like a whole mess that is happening back in Genoa. Where basically the team is up in the middle of nowhere. You did mention a few new signings. Some were purchased, so like the Vasquez situation, and others are on loan, etc. Or City, who's actually bought. But But the team is actually up for sale. So there's a whole bunch of rumors going on right now that there's this crazy, strange, no one knows who it is. People are saying that it's an American investment team or whatever. That is,
which wouldn't be too far-fetched, would it? Because of the influx of American, North American ownership in Calcio these days, right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, so that you can understand that there was a whole bunch of a stall also for the market. And now it seems suddenly within the last 2 days only, a whole bunch of names are coming back up. And as you said, Maximovich, and then Caicedo is another word, a name that came up again.
Okay.
That apparently he has agreed to sign. Now, again, all medicals and all that still has to all happen. And so they talked about Perotti coming back because he's...
I've also seen... Yeah, and I've also seen, and I'm sorry to cut you off, but I did see this, and I forgot to write in my notes, but Fares from, Mohamed Fares from Lazio, that's another possibility, which I think would be amazing for the defense. I think if you put Fares in there with, you know, this Belgian kid, Maximovic, and possibly, you know, Crisito in there, or maybe even, you know, the Mexican Vasquez in there, it's not a bad-looking defense. And I think that might be the real area of need, I think. Am I correct? Because you might get the goals from this Ghanaian kid, and Pandev could contribute as well. Rovella's great in the midfield. That might be it, might it not?
Well, you know, it's funny how things happen. Like, even last year, the squad seemed, I mean, technically, I think it was very low at the beginning of the season. And only thanks to the January market, you can only see a whole bunch like of improvement from Strootman and so on. But yes, the defense is definitely where your starting point, because the 4-0, even though, mind you, the team, again, up in the air, not sure, Mercato still right. Open, and so on. We have to think about it. If we look at the starting 11, or all with the changes, etc., I think 5 or 6 were actually from Primavera, or under 20, per se. So that shows you that there are a lot of pieces that are missing, and a lot of them, we already covered them, like the names that we just brought a little bit earlier. So, yes, definitely starting from the defense. You need to... I'm not like a pro defense type of approach and then you do the contropiede after. No, I'm mm-hmm. not talking about that. But you definitely have to make sure that you're not going to get so many. I mean, mm-hmm. mind you, being our old coach, Gasperini, where he was still getting a lot of goals, but he was doing tons even more above that, then that's okay.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. You know, but...
When you
don't have that type of approach, that type of game, the mechanics of it, then you have to really keep a little bit less goals coming in.
Mm-hmm. And so Ballardini is the manager. He stays in. He does sort of present to you like a three. He fielded a 3-4-1-2. Is that normally the formation that goes? And do you think that that's an approach that they take against Napoli? Now, you know, we have Napoli, you know, on the weekend, as I mentioned at the beginning here. Give us your feelings about the fixture against Napoli. It's again tough. Inter Napoli right away. Very tough.
It's a tough one. Well, yeah, as you said, like the first two games, I was actually reading this article, it was quite interesting, where it said, you know, they're talking about, there's the talks about Serie A dropping from 20 to 18 teams, so it's 38 going to 34, I can't remember the math here, but and then they were saying, well, it wouldn't really matter for Genoa anyways, because we're not playing the first two games, we're only playing from match day 3. Anyways, right. It's going to be a tough one. Nothing really has changed since the Inter game with respect to the players, other than, no, I have to actually rephrase myself. So one change is Vasquez. Like, he just landed, I think, officially on Monday, yes. So he's already started to train.
I'm sorry to cut you off, but was he not available because of his play in the Olympics? Did he have an extra time, amount of rest? Okay. Because yes. I have a very, very passionate Mexican fan who is one of our barbers at my barbershop. And, you know, I'm a barber and I run the shop with him. And he was very upset to not see him playing. I'm surprised he didn't know that he just wasn't in Genoa yet. So we'll have to reassure him for that, because he's going to be paying a lot of attention to Genoa because of Vasquez coming in. But yeah, so, you know, Vasquez will be available. What about this Ghanaian kid? I feel like, or kid, 27, you know, I feel like he could be a spark, no?
He could. I don't know. I'll be honest with you. I don't know too much about him. I know that there is optimal potential. I've seen a couple of articles that they were talking that there might not be super friendship with the coach, with Ballardini. Too sure, because, you know, when you read stuff, you kind of have to like read it between the lines and understand that it's not all true.
Yes,
yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. So, but then you see pictures with them, the two of them talking. So it's like, okay, well, then what are we talking about? But yeah, it could be definitely a surprise there. Buxa definitely, I think he showed well, at least in the few friendlies, the very few friendlies that we had. So yeah. I think that could be another surprise. They're all young too, these ones here, but right. Except the one that you were talking before.
Yes. So, No real new approach, you think? You've seen any new approach towards the Napoli match? You think it'll just be
Sorry, I missed that. I mean,
heard okay. The question. I intervened with the Vasquez stuff, so you. I'm sorry. Continue on.
So actually, let me close the Vasquez part. So he did land the day before of Inter game. So he hadn't trained or anything, so that I guess for caution purposes, or maybe the actual contract was not deposited yet, but he has officially started training. The players had the day off on Monday, but he was the only one actually training, so it was he's now fully fledged, at least training. Now okay. From there to say he's going to have the whole entire 90 minutes, I can't say, but I foresee that he will be definitely put in on the pitch against Napoli. Now, with respect to Ballardini's module, you see a 3-5-1-2, but sometimes I think ideally against Inter, it was a starter as a 4. Let me hear the numbers. 4-3-1-2. Does that make sense?
Footmob had them at a 3-4-1-2, where you had 3 defenders, 4 midfielders. One person in the number 10 spot, and then Pandev and Kalon. So it was Sirigu in goal, Krishito, Van Huisden, Birashi. You had Cambiaso, Badels, Rovella, and Sturaro in the midfield, with Hernani in the number 10 spot and Pandev and Kalon as the two strikers. So it was a 3-4-1-2. But I just don't know if Ballardini plays with a 3 normally. Is that something that you're familiar with? Or?
All started with Andrea Zoli. So
okay.
I don't know how much you have looked back into the past.
Not much for this interview, no.
Well, it's okay. Don't worry. Like, it all started, like, I was more used to, like, the only time I remember the 3 in the back was always with Gasperini. Otherwise, after that, I've always seen 4 at the bare minimum. If not, starting with a 5 with the 2 going up. Anyways. But so it's fairly new for me, at least within the last year-ish. Or so, and I think unless you have a really good team or a good module itself, it's risky if you don't have like a strong back defense and at least 2 of the centers or a block. Like, one of the major problems from last year, and that's where we saw the difference with Badel and Strootman after they're playing together, was they were filtering everything through. So even if you had like your Maldini or your great defenders of all time, and the midfield is not filtering anything, you're just going to have issues no matter what. Gladly, even though he has been sold, I think you're right against the Inter. Definitely, Van Huisden was one of the best ones, and I have to say Rovella was excellent. Like, the guy, I think he's just going to be an excellent future. Also for the national team, in my opinion.
Exactly. All right. So, any chance that you're willing to give us a projection, but more like a projection of where you feel Genoa will finish this season. Now, I know it's early. It's so early. The Mercato's not even over. But given what you know is coming, what you know, what you've seen, you know, in the Mercato so far, you know, also, I should also mention that you beat Perugia in the Coppa Italia. So your next match is up against Salernitana in December. It's December 9th. Yeah, but that could mean a quarterfinal appearance because Salernitana, I don't think, is that good. I mean, I know they got Simi, which is nice. He's a good goal scorer, but that doesn't mean that he's going to light it up this year too.
Right.
But you know, where do you see Genoa ending up? Can they stave off relegation? Because I like to. Usually when I bring up Napoli, Fiorentina, and Genoa, clubs that are big in history, rich in history, that have fallen from grace and returned, I usually bring up Genoa and Fiorentina a lot when I speak about these things. And when people like try to criticize Aurelio De Laurentiis, Napoli's president, for what the things that he's doing. And usually, with all due respect, usually I say to them, well, look at Fiorentina and Genoa, who went through the same stuff while we were going through them. And look where we are and look where these guys are, sometimes fighting off relegation, sometimes finishing respectable. For the past couple seasons, Genoa has really staved off relegation and done so, you know, with respectably, really, playing really good at the right time. Can you do it this season too? Can Gordon Pandev, Criscito, and crew keep you guys in Serie A? Because I wouldn't want to see a Genoa, you know, even though our Gemellaggi is sort of over.
I know.
And that's for weird. Them to decide. Yeah, exactly, that's exactly. For them to decide. I always keep an eye on Genoa because of that. So for me, Serie A without Genoa is just kind of, it's a little emptier, you know? So what do you think? Do you think you guys can pull it off and stay up?
So you have two answers here. You want the heart answer or the mind answer?
I do. I want them both. Yes, please. Because I know all about heart and the mind. Trust me, I do.
So the heart obviously is going to say no. It's impossible. It'll always, even names that will come through to come and play for Genoa, even if you've never heard of them, they're going to be amazing. Like, look at Shmurdov as an example, mm-hmm. right? Nobody heard about him, and look at what happened there. Now, mind you, that they did the sell mainly to get some cash. But now, the brain. Now, the brain is telling me, as it stands right now, if nothing changed, I have a funny feeling that even though at the before match day one, it was not called to be one of the bottom three, it would be. If the club itself changed ownership and or some of these extra new players are going to be coming in, and a few names we already listed them quite a few times now, then I can probably see a better, at least a mid-table.
Okay, I really appreciate your honesty. That's really nice of you. I think that because to be honest with you, I mean, I'm always gonna look at the promoted teams and say, okay, maybe, you know, Venezia is not good enough. Salernitana certainly isn't good enough. Empoli hasn't really changed. I mean, they destroyed Serie B, but you know they haven't really done much anything in the Mercato either, and. You know, our friend from Venezia last weekend, Marco Rinaldi, said, well, all you have to do is be better than three teams, and he feels Venezia can be better than three teams. I really do feel like Genoa can be better than three teams as well. I like the team I see if, like you said, the prospects come in. But something that I'd like to maybe end with is Preziosi, because this is new information to me. I really had no idea that Preziosi was looking to sell the club. Preziosi's been the owner for as long as I can remember, you know, 16? Basically when, you know, around the same time De Laurentiis took over Napoli, it's like they've gone through this journey together. And now, you know, like I said, Fiorentina happened a couple seasons before Napoli. The Della Valles are gone, and now it's Rocco Commisso. And you know, Preziosi was in there when De Laurentiis was the manager. I mean, the owner too. That the same time came back up together, had that really good feast that we had at the Marassi, which was great. And now he's looking to sell too. Why? What's going on? Is it just that he's done with it? Is it COVID? Is it, you know, everybody was affected by it. The economy today. What's going on?
Well, definitely COVID doesn't help, but definitely it did not start from there. Genoa has not been performing well at all for at least the last 5-6 years. And the city is fed up, obviously, at least the Genoa side. They're like protesting throughout in different ways and so on. So the team, the club has been put on sale at least, you know, officially, but not officially because it never actually happened. At least for the last that I can think of, 5 to 8 years has been put on sale. So then magically some people come, then they disappear, or he has his interviews by saying, oh, they were not serious people. I want to give them in serious hands.
Right.
Well, the question here is, has he lost the interest or that, you know, that desire to for soccer? Because he has done tons of bad things. Tons. And I'm not going to even start to list them unless we want to have another episode. Yeah, for sure. But what was I going to say with that? He is well known in this culture world, at least Italian culture world, that he has a sniff for talent. So he has brought different major players, then some of them just dropped out of the, you know, radar altogether. Look at Piątek, for example, right? Mm-hmm. But he has always, he sniffed very well a lot of talent. So has he lost that desire because, I don't know, the overall culture soccer money, it's like too much? Like, imagine, think about this. Like, Napoli is, let me think, the third largest city in Italy.
Right.
And it's the only team. Genoa is the sixth largest city, and it has two teams.
Right.
So that means that at least half, whatever that number is, that means that it's the size of Firenze. But, you know, Firenze is alone. Genoa is dividing the team or with the other side. So that's also difficult. So what I'm trying all to say with this was the only way for a mid-sized table team and so on to survive is basically grow talent and sell it. A lot of fans are really against this. I'm not saying I'm happy about it, but I can see from the other side, what are they supposed to do?
Sure. Right. Sometimes fans don't understand and or appreciate the business side of things, you know, that there's, you know, and until today, just now, I never really put that together where Genoa in, you know, in terms of its size in Genoa city, you know, they share a stadium, they share a city with a team, like, you know, with another team and a big team, you know, like the two big historic teams, you know what I mean? So it's
oh, I don't know about historic for the other side. Sorry. But.
Well, I say historic because I grew up at the tail end of the Maradona era where Sampdoria won its only Scudetto and had that 4 years of magic and then disappeared. But, you know, but I understand where you're coming from. I see where your mind is. And a lot of, like I said, a lot of fans don't have that sense, you know, to this is how clubs need to run itself, you know, unless a mogul comes in or a multi-millionaire billionaire decides to come in and throw all this money into a team, it's just not going to happen, you know.
Well, look at even Barcelona. They had to get rid of like the best player in the world. Juventus themselves, they're ready to get rid of Ronaldo because it's not profitable anymore.
That's right.
You know, they have to look at the books and they have to understand and evaluate that. That's on a larger scale. Imagine like on a lower scale. Like Napoli City is like over a million-ish people, population. So they're all entirely fans. Just going back to the conversation, the thing I was saying before.
Sure.
And Genova is like 550,000. If you divide that in two, that's 250,000.
Sure.
You know, that's a quarter of the fan base of Napoli. That's like, you know, it's tough.
It is tough. I understand. Fabrizio, thank you so much for all this time you've given me. I enjoyed tremendously talking to you about Genoa. I really do wish you the best of luck and Genoa and the Genoa fans all over the world. I do wish you guys luck in the season, just not on Sunday.
oh, wait.
But, yeah. yeah. I'll tell you what.
Sorry.
That's okay. What I said was
It's true, Francis.
I'll end with good luck to Sampdoria's opponents. How about that? But Fabrizio, thank you again. I'd love to have you back on. I know we messaged a little bit last season to try this, but I'm really happy to be able to get it off, you know, and running. And I'm happy that you were my Genoa contact here. Is there anything else you want to plug yourself, plug the club, possibly plug your, you know, is that where you are on Twitter? You don't have anything personal or any other projects or anything like that?
Well, I'm basically working off of the three major, so you can find Genoa Club Toronto just simply doing the search anyways, both sure. On all three, Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. So more than welcome, the more the merrier, and it's not only about the top four.
Mm-hmm. That's right. No, that's right. And that's why I want to do this. You know, I'll tell you what, between last week with Venezia and this week with you guys, you know, I don't really have to do a lot of, our next opponents are Juve. I don't really have to do a lot of research and don't care to, but I will have a friend of mine on, but it's been so great. I love it so far. And, you know, just to open my eyes to the other Serie A teams, you know, they're there, you know, their history, you know what they're about, but to go in deep, is just amazing. And I thank you again. Yeah, I really do thank you so much. Fabrizio Cardone of Genoa Club Toronto. We'll see you guys next week for another edition of Frenemies. Ciao, ciao. Ciao, Fabrizio.
Ciao, thank you.
And there you have it. Another edition of Far From Vesuvius is in the books. I want to thank again Dr. Henry Bell and Kirsten Schlewitz for coming back into the fold here, coming back into the Far From Vesuvius network. I also want to thank again Fabrizio Cardone of Genoa Club Toronto. I really did mean what I said when I said that I'm just so excited to meet new people, talk about their club, talk about how they feel about, you know, the upcoming match with Napoli, doing a lot of investigative work for, you know, preparation to talk to them. It's been such a pleasure, and the last two guests that we've had for Frenemies have been great, you know, Marco and Fabrizio. I want to take a minute just to address the audio that I had in the main part of the podcast. It wasn't the best. I figured it out. You know, I've assumed this role with Far From Vesuvius as sort of the head honcho, the ship steerer here. And along the way, there's going to be some hiccups, and that was one of them. And I know it's happened once or twice before, but I think I've got it down now, guys. So bear with me, okay? Please like all of our stuff on social media that you can. Please follow us at Far From Vesuvius on Twitter. You can find us by searching Far From Vesuvius on Instagram and Facebook as well. Please subscribe to our channels. Please, you know, rate our podcasts. Don't forget the Raff and Raff Rant every single Monday night on YouTube Live, Facebook Live, and Twitter Live at Raff Rant. Don't forget that we will be having a lot more content coming your way here at Far From Vesuvius Network. We're a network now, not just a podcast, live shows, podcasts, articles, graphics coming up. There's a lot of stuff coming up, great stuff. So I'm really excited. I want to thank all of our supporters, all of our fans all over the world. You guys have been nothing short of amazing. Please leave us questions or comments when we do a hashtag FFV. When we do a podcast, we love listening to you. We love shouting you out. We love talking to you. And we love you. Un abbraccio forte. Forza Napoli sempre. Ciao, ciao.